Well, first of all, thank you so much, Pastor Kevin. This is amazing being with you. For those of you that are online, I want to give a huge shout out to you as well. But it's such a humbling privilege to be joining you. And I'm so grateful to be part of your family for the day. And to have gotten to know Pastor Kevin over the last couple of months as we've been preparing for this has been a real joy. I mean, his love for Christ, his love for the Word, his love for the church, the difference the church is making locally and globally has just come out in so many different ways. And to also be here as you're like beginning to prepare 150 years of ministry legacy as a faith community is just wild. So congrats to you in advance of that. And one thing on a little side note, I'm an ice cream fanatic. And to have, I missed by a couple of weeks, Miss Mary's like ice cream, like the tasting fundraiser thing. And I know wherever Doyle is, he was like a judge. I would like give my, I don't say my right arm, to be a judge at Miss Mary's next year. If you want to have me back as an honorary judge, I'll come. I almost booked a flight 2 or 3 weeks ago to come for it. To find out that for like $7 or $8, you can taste like 70 flavors of homemade ice cream. I mean, like, tell you what, you all have got it going on. You really, really do. So it really is a pleasure to be with you. But again, congratulations to this 150 years of God's work through your faith community to this community and the broader world as well. So is it? Can I introduce my family to you? Is that all right? Is that cool? So this is my wife, Frances, Pastor Kevin mentioned. Fun fact about my wife, she used to live in Atlanta before we even met, and she lived in Fulton County, and her maiden name is Fulton. So I didn't even know I was in Fulton County until about 2 hours ago, and I texted her. She wasn't able to travel with me this weekend. But anyways, this is at my daughter's wedding. This is a couple years ago. It's my wife, Frances. This is our daughter, Chelsea, her husband, Joe, my son, Zach, and our daughter-in-law, Ashley. And when this photo was taken, she was pregnant. And then since then, they gave birth to our first grandson. And this picture popping up right now is Bellamy. And he is like the best. And we're loving being grandparents. I'm loving the grandpa journey. This was actually just about a week and a half ago. I was with him in California, and we just had a great time. I actually dressed him this day. You should have seen day one. Day one wasn't so good. This was day two. But now, without a doubt, many of you have probably heard of World Vision. And if by chance you haven't, here's who we are. Our mission is to follow Jesus. That's our mission, to follow Jesus. And we do this by serving the poor and the oppressed. And we've been doing this in the most vulnerable context in the name of the Lord. In the name of the Lord, in 100 countries for over 70 years. But today, I want to give you an inside scoop of something pretty crazy happening at World Vision. There's a renewing spirit, and it's birthing new ideas. And I'm telling you, there's a big idea that Pastor Kevin and I want to share with you in just a few minutes. Now, when someone hears that I ran across the United States, they always like to hear a few statistics. So I'll give you a few. I'll start with a picture. This is how the U.S. run began and ended. On the left, that's April 8th, 2013. That's at the far west rail of the Santa Monica Pier. And I didn't plan on, I fell to my knees moments before I started running, just out of like, oh my goodness, Lord, I am just humbled before you. And trusting whatever is, going to unfold over these next days and months, or didn't even know if it would be months or years, had no idea how long the actual U.S. run would last. And on the right side is when the run ended, that's September 6th, 2013, that's at Battery Park. Here's what happened in between those two spots. I ran 3,081 miles, not that I was counting, I was, every mile. I ran through 14 states, went through 10 pair of ASIC running shoes, consumed on average 5,000 to 6,000 calories a day. We figured I ate 1,000 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches mid-run. God bless PB&J, and I still love them. I could have 5 of them right now, I still love PB&J. Highest sustained elevation was 7,500 feet in Arizona. Greatest aggregate elevation change was in the Allegheny Mountains of Pennsylvania. 1 week of running was 175 miles with 32,000 feet of aggregate elevation change. Scariest moment, being attacked by 6 wild dogs in Oklahoma. And that's a whole nother story for another time. And then the most satisfying, as Pastor Kevin mentioned, was seeing over $500,000 raised for clean water in Africa. But I have to tell you, those of you that are here and for those of you that are online as well, I am like the most unlikely guy to have ever run across the United States. You see, I didn't run my first marathon, I didn't run my first anything until 2007, and it was the Chicago Marathon with World Vision. I was a complete non-runner, I hated running and wanted nothing to do with it. But I felt God moving me past my comfort zones and beyond my fears. As a matter of fact, I had four goals for my first marathon. Goal number one was to hate running less every time I ran. The second goal was to train well enough to make it to the starting line. The third goal was to finish before they closed the course. Like, these were not high goals, you all. They just weren't. And then the fourth goal was to raise $1,000 for clean water. And I thought it was going to be a one and out deal. But God reversed something in me. He reversed something in me. A few years later, I was invited to go and run the 56-mile Comrades Ultramarathon in South Africa. You heard me right, 56 miles. Now, I didn't much like running 26 miles. Why would I want to run 56? But yet again, I was finding God inviting me past my fears and out of my comfort zone. 6 months after that race, I was on an innocent 6-mile run near my in-laws' home in Ohio. And while I was on this run, at about mile 3 of that run, I heard a whisper in my spirit. It wasn't an audible thing, but the whisper simply said this: Steve, you're to run across the United States for the good of others. Now, I thought that was like a bad burrito from the night before. Like, that's just a weird thought to get. I literally didn't tell my wife Frances about this for 2 months because I just thought, this is so strange. What do I do with this thought? And I'm sure you've done this over the course of the summer. You've been in some water settings at a pool or a lake or what have you, and you push a beach ball under the surface of the water, right? And what happens when you push it down? You push it down and it pops back up again. You push it down and it pops back up again, right? That's exactly what I did with this notion, with this vision, with this sense from God for the next 12 months. I just kept pushing it down. And God, like he does, kept rising it to the surface again. Until finally in surrender, a full 12 months later, I just put my arms up and I said, God, I know you're calling me to devote myself more to running and how running changes lives. And if the expression of that is a run from LA to New York filled with more unknowns than we can count, I'm in. I don't get it, but I'm in. So we did what all sane people do. I resigned my pastoral role over 16 years at Willow Creek Community Church. My wife sold and liquidated a brick and mortar 3,000 square foot antique business that she'd been building for 6 years. And the driving question is why? Why would we do this? Why would I do this? Why would we endure what is arguably the hardest thing that we'd ever done, the hardest thing that I'd ever done, physically, emotionally? Why? Because God was beginning to reverse a false narrative in my life, in our lives. And the false narrative is this: that people who have less are less. That's the false narrative. And God would use a run from LA to New York to reverse that narrative that people who have less are less. But what we are called to do as Christ's followers is to affirm the inherent dignity in people and to restore the broken circumstances in our world, especially for those who are the most vulnerable, to affirm inherent dignity and to restore broken circumstances. And I know you probably know this, but Jesus, while he walked the earth, he talked about caring for the poor and the vulnerable more than just about anything else on his time here on earth. Specifically in Matthew 25, where about 100 of you lived out this week by doing the Matthew 25 challenge. These verses became real to you in an experiential way. You created space, as Pastor Kevin invited you to do last week, to create space for God to work. And this passage really comes to life when Jesus said, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me." And then the righteous will answer him almost quizzically, if you can put yourself in that position. "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison and go to visit you?"
And then the king will reply, truly, I tell you, whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did it for me. You see what Jesus did with this? For those of you that are here and for those of you that are listening and watching online, Jesus flipped everything with this statement. You see, Jesus' kingdom is actually a kingdom of radical reversal. It's a different kind of kingdom. Instead of riding in on a stallion, what did Jesus do? He came in riding on a donkey, right? And instead of having servants, what did Jesus do? He washed his disciples' feet. Here's the deal. According to Matthew 25, Jesus invites us to call and receive the most hurting around us as family. As family. To reverse the false narrative that those who have less are less, and to affirm dignity and to restore broken circumstances. And when you think about it, this is it, friends. These are the two action steps of the radical reversing kingdom of God. To use our resources and our blessings to get in the game and to actually help and bring about the restoration of broken circumstances, even if it's just for one person or for one child. And I don't know about you, but I'm often tempted to think, oh, I don't need to do this because somebody else right in my row, oh, they're going to do that. But when we say yes to building this radically reversing kingdom of God, man, you know what happens? I mean, not only are the people we're serving changed, and not only are communities transformed, but our lives are changed in ways we never thought possible. And I'd like to tell you about a 7-year-old girl who changed everything for me. This is Winnie. And this is a child that Francis and I began sponsoring ahead of the U.S. run. And this is when I had the unique privilege of meeting her in August of 2012. And it was on this day that I met Winnie and her family at their very humble home in the Rift Valley area of Kenya. And then after some greetings, we walked 1 mile to their water source. And you can't really see it, but there's a small pond right here in this image. And it's where Winnie's family washed what little clothes they have. It's where they bathed, and I saw livestock around the perimeter of this thing, you can't see this in the image, who were drinking and relieving themselves. And this is their water source. And then we drew water out of this contaminated water source in that 5-gallon container that you see in my hands. And I had a smile on my face in this image, but I knew the water filling that container would kill half the kids. Half the kids under the age of 5 in Winnie's village. And then I carried it back, 1 mile back to Winnie's home. It weighs 50 pounds full. So think of an old school microwave on your shoulder full of water. And that walk back to Winnie's home wrecked me. There was a seismic shift that happened in my life, in my heart, in my whole ethos that day. And I literally have not been the same since. And my heart broke thinking about Winnie and the thousands of kids like her that would not have a shot at life. And I think it was God's ordination that allowed me to sit right here and to watch some of your children sit up here for the children's message. And I looked into the eyes of several of the girls that were standing there. And I thought, they're about the age that Winnie was when I met her. And my heart just kind of broke. I had a moment right up here with your kids as they were just listening. And my heart broke for Winnie. Then I learned, I was fairly new to some World Vision stuff at that point. I learned how our $39 a month was being pooled together with the $39 of other children being sponsored in Winnie's community to not only bring clean water, but sanitation, hygiene, education, healthcare, microfinance, and even an introduction to who Jesus is. You see, one of the things that we do in the communities that we bring clean water, which are tons of them, is we bring in a program called Jesus, the Source of Living Water. So as clean, fresh water is brought for the body, Jesus' living water for the soul is introduced. So how cool is that, right? And this next image on the left is when I met Winnie. It was almost a decade ago to the day. is when I first met her. This is before they had access to clean water and a sense of what fullness of life could look like. On the right is when I just saw Winnie just before COVID shut everything down. And they now have access to clean water. Winnie is excelling in school. Her family, thanks to her mom, Justina, who is a rock star, by the way. She's a thriving garden business. And every Sunday morning, get this, Winnie teaches 20 to 25 smaller children truths from Scripture like you hear at Roswell each and every week. And we've now seen and hung out with Winnie three times since first meeting her in 2012. And I'm telling you, this young, vibrant, joy-filled girl, she's not only family friends. She has redefined family for us. Broken circumstances restored. Inherent dignity affirmed. People and their whole communities transformed. And in the few minutes that I have remaining, I want to tell you one quick story from the U.S. run, and then I want to invite you into something very powerful today. I just crossed into New Jersey and was within days of the U.S. run finishing, and something supernatural, almost unexplainable, occurred. For starters, I had 35 miles on my run schedule that day, and I didn't start running until 1 o'clock in the afternoon, which is a little daunting. For any of you that have run before, it's a little daunting to start a 35-mile run at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And at about 6 p.m., with a gray sky hanging at mile 25, I started up a fairly sharp incline. Now, I just finished this brutal week of running in the Allegheny Mountains, 175 miles with 32,000 feet of aggregate elevation change. The last thing that I wanted was another 2-mile climb. And my first thought was, why is there a mountain here? Like, I'm in New Jersey. Like, isn't New Jersey supposed to be flat? I had no idea about Western geography in New Jersey. It is mountainous. And with each uphill step, man, I just got more and more irritated. The irritation soon turned to anger. Anger at this stupid incline. Anger at this ridiculous run. Anger for how crappy I felt. And then finally, I was just angry at God. And I'm not proud of this, but that quiet road heard some choice four-letter words from a very fatigued soul. And directly after my fit of anger, a sense of aloneness swept over me. Deep sense of aloneness. While I knew dozens, if not hundreds, of people were holding me up in prayer, I felt alone and isolated like never before. And in the midst of this overwhelming feeling, I just put my head down and I just put one uphill step in front of the other. A moment later, I lifted my head and I noticed a cyclist coming down on my side of the road. Now, as the cyclist grew closer to me, he failed to come off the shoulder to give me room to run. This added to my growing irritation. I thought, buddy, this pastor is in a bad place. I said, do not play chicken with me. I mean, I will drop you into the ditch. I'm just telling you, I'll drop you into the ditch. And when he got about 20 yards from me, he stopped. And then he said, are you Steve Spear? And I was like, yes. And then he said, you're the guy running across the United States for clean water in Africa, right? And I said in continued disbelief, yes. And then the next line out of his mouth floored me, as if what he already said hadn't. He said, I just wanted to let you know there's a group of about 10 people a mile up the road, and they're ready to cheer you on. We heard what you were doing, and we wanted you to know, and he used these words, you are not alone. We believe in you. And with those words, friends, I was in complete spiritual shock. I was stunned. I was overwhelmed. I was blown away. And then this angel of hope rode alongside me. I mean, previously I wanted to deck him, but now he's my angel of hope. It just shows you how fickle I am, right? And sure enough, we went about a mile up the road, and there's a group of about 10 people ready to rock my world. And this image that you see right now will mean nothing to you. But these are my New Jersey angels. You see, they restored something in me that day. And I still had about 10 more miles to run on the day, so I didn't stay a super long time. But when the next 10 or 15 minutes, we shared about our mutual faith in God, we prayed, we hugged, we had a time of celebration. And it was just an amazing, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of heaven on earth, if you will. And as I ran into the next mile, I marveled at the divine orchestration of the previous 45 minutes. You see, our faithful God had met me amidst my broken spirit and my sense of aloneness. He knew this son of his was in trouble, and he miraculously tapped a group of unknown strangers to surround him with presence and hope and remind him that he is not alone. So First Baptist family, both here and those of you that are online, I have a reminder for you and an invitation. Here's the reminder. You are not alone. You are not alone. Whatever you came into this space with, and for those of you that are online, whatever is troubling your spirit and your soul today, I want to remind you that you are not alone. I love how the psalmist puts it in Psalm 125, verses 1 and 2. As the mountains surround Jerusalem, so the Lord surrounds his people, both now and forevermore. You are not alone. And here's the powerful invitation for you today. That you can come alongside a child, and not just any child, but a child in Uganda, to be exact, and not only remind them that they are not alone, but to reverse the false narrative that people who have less are less, and to affirm their inherent dignity, and to restore their broken circumstances. In the next few moments, we have a vision that would bring this radically reversing hope to the children and families in Uganda, specifically in a community called Bursariba. You see, Bursariba is filled with beautiful children who lack the basic resources to thrive. Yet they are so full of hope, though they have so little. And I'm telling you, the challenges of the last couple of years have made the most vulnerable in our world even more vulnerable. And honestly, the pairing of the legacy-type faith of 150 years of First Baptist Roswell with the pioneering work that we're doing in Bursariba right now, this is not a coincidence, friends. It just isn't a coincidence. And there are over 1,200 children waiting to be sponsored in this community. And frankly, I've been blown away because there's a red-hot vision at First Baptist since you're going into your 150-year anniversary. What would it look like if 150 people said yes to sponsoring a child today? Today, what would that look like? And Pastor Kevin's vision and the hope and the vision of your church leaders has blown me away. This is a God-sized vision. So today, I'm inviting you, each and every one of you here, and for those of you that are online, to sponsor a child in Uganda who are desperately waiting on a sponsor, and how your $39 a month, just as with Winnie, will be pooled together with others to restore the circumstances in their lives and in the community as well. And I know, of course, for those of you here and for those of you that are online, that many of you sponsor a child already. And we're so grateful for that. But I'm hoping and trusting the Lord will open your heart for one more. I'm praying that because I'm telling you this is unique and it's groundbreaking, and let me tell you why. Typically, how we would invite you to sponsor a child today is that you would walk probably right out through these doors, out these piano doors, out where the info center area is, and there you would see a big display of children's picture folders on clothesline with clothespins, and you would go out there and you would look at all of these children for you to choose from. Imagine that kind of a setup right now here, and for those of you online, dozens and dozens of picture folders of children to choose from. But for the last year or so, we've been praying some big prayers at World Vision. Big prayers that would continue to push us in new ways to better serve his vulnerable children. And not long ago, he birthed an idea that radically reversed our world. He led us to ask the question, what would it look like for the first time ever if this whole thing were reversed? And instead of us choosing a child, they were empowered to choose us.
Who you love and gave your son is all.